step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 465. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined today by Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. Remember, you guys, we stream this on KOOP.org, so you should listen. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. Show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Touch and I know.
It is Wednesday, May 16th, 2018. On the show today, we have City Theater and their show All My Sons, written by someone named Arthur Miller. Later on, we will play our interview with Harry Connick Jr. And of course, we will have lovely and lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, London, Manchester, and Manchester by the Bay. Don't go away.
All you desire.
You know, by the time I get to the third city, my imagination is completely gone.
I'm surprised you don't pick new cities each week and put them on the
I like to challenge myself, even though I miserably fail every week.
Have you ever been to Arthur Miller's Brothers restaurant?
Is it called Miller's Brothers?
It's called Bill Miller's.
Bill Miller's.
No, but I have had his uncle's beer.
Yeah?
Yes.
It's really great.
It's good. Because I have the high life. So I'm checking in with Nick Squared. We're all a big family today. Nick Mayo, how are you? We missed you last week.
I am well. Thank you for asking. I missed you guys, too.
You were on a trip.
Oh, yeah. How's everything going?
You were on a trip on down the mighty Mississippi.
Yep.
We fired our guns. And Nicole Shiro, how are you?
Good.
Nicole's got a killer haircut.
She does have a killer haircut.
It's a killer haircut.
And my friend Susan Pollock also got a bob as well. So it seems to me, I think I'm next.
You know what? It's good.
The other Miller boy, Bob Miller.
So let's introduce the folks that are sitting here with us. We have a small house for us, which is great. We love it. It's intimate.
It's
Bo Paul, welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Nice to be here. And Tracy Hurd.
Hi, welcome. How are you?
Wonderful. Did you recognize that little song that I played?
I didn't.
Little Diddy.
Because you know why?
We didn't have headsets on.
No. True that. Brand new song written by somebody named Duncan Sheik.
Who's
for a
that?
Little show called Spring Awakening. And it premiered last night on the very last show of Rise.
Mm. I saw that it was the season premiere, and I said, ooh, I wonder if they're going to do the song tonight.
No, it wasn't the season premiere. It was a
season finale,
which is also, as it turns out, the finale of the series.
Oh, it was all.
Yeah, it did not get picked
up. It was just
up.
The finale.
Do either of you watch Rise?
I did not.
No,
I'm
I don't
afraid.
Know it.
But well, I'm glad to know they're finally making a musical out of Eugene O'Neill's works.
It's true, me too. And we're going to talk about one, A Long Day's Journey to Night, the musical.
Dun, dun, dun.
So there's an exclamation point at the end. Long Day's Journey to Night!
Exactly. As we've talked on this show, Rise is that series about a high school theater department doing a production of Spring Awakening, and I did not like it at first, and I hate watched it, and then I started to like it, and now I'm kind of sad that it's leaving. But they did show, so it was the last night, and it culminated in the performance of Spring Awakening, and they premiered this new song, which is quite lovely, actually.
That is lovely.
It is nice. As we always say, like, it's nice for theater to show up in people's living rooms.
It's true. And what's lovely about this is that Duncan Sheik wrote it for, evidently, this is now part of Spring Awakening. So it's not just for the TV show.
Well, do they stop singing in the middle of the song and do asides, though?
There's all sorts of stuff, yes. Yeah, it's you know, you see bits and pieces of it, and it cuts to them talking and blah, 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 snickety, blah. Like that.
Blah, blah, snickety, blah. Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, 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 blah. So the Tonys are happening June 10th.
Ooh.
And I'm just going to say this out loud right now. I'm considering, and depending on whether I'm able to stream it live or not, and assuming nothing else is at Ground Floor Theater at the time, I'm thinking about having a Tony watch party at the theater.
Well, look at you!
What?
Cue Rachel does stuff. Who will go to the Tonys with me?
Exactly.
I've never seen that viral video. But yeah, I cut the cord a while ago. And
cut the cord with the Tonys?
I cut the cord with cable television. So finding a streaming service that will do a live event like the Oscars, something like that, has been a little bit of a nightmare. Every now and then you can luck out and like YouTube will do something like that. But
I think Broadway World and Playbill will do that this year.
They certainly did with the nominations.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know whether it was New York Times or something, but there's a link on offstageonair.com. There's a lovely, it's 23 portrait of Tony nominees.
On Theatermania.
Theatermania. Did you see?
Is that where it was? Yeah, it was really cool.
It's wonderful. And there were some really wonderful shots. And now I remember when I first went through it, I said, oh, I've got to tell everybody about the picture of this one person. I can't remember who I was talking about.
Oh. It was so good. It was one of the 23 people.
So as you know, every year, or for the past 5 years or so, our good friend Laura Benanti has been doing this explaining the show. She does one for straight plays and one for musicals. I'm kind of getting tired of it, but...
You laughed?
No.
Oh.
I left it one of them. But I'm going to let everybody else have their own. I've got it here for us to listen to. So it's just a minute. Let's hear. This is Laurie Benanti explains the Tony nominees for plays.
The Children is about little people who torture you. 1984 is about 10 years before I was born. The Terms of My Surrender is about marriage vows. John Lithgow, Stories by Heart, is John Lithgow telling you stories from his heart. Saint Joan is about Joan of Arc. Marvin's Room is about a room that doesn't belong to you, Walter. Children of a Lesser God is about Solange. Junk is about what I'm doing right now. Latin History for Morons is Latin history. Meteor Shower is about a beautiful woman in a gold dress. And there's other people in that play as well. The Iceman Cometh is about your freezer. The Parisian Woman is about Uma Thurman, but she's not French. Lobby Hero is about Captain America's porn stash. Three Tall Women is not about four tiny men. Time's up. Farinelli and the King is about a delicious pasta and the man who eats it. Angels in America is long as hell, but excellent. M. Butterfly is about a butterfly whose first name is Margaret. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is about your favorite book that was made into a play that you were like, cool, I'll go see it and spend $7 million. Travesties is about our current administration. Nailed it.
True enough, Miss Benanti. So there was some fun stuff.
There was a few funny ones in there. We giggled a few times.
We did have an off-Broadway opening at BAM.
Mm-hmm.
BAM!
It is not the musical, Bo, I'm sorry, but it was Long Day's
it's
Journey
It's not the
tonight.
Sequel to Stomp.
No, it was a import from across the pond of Long Day's Journey Tonight, starring Jeremy Irons and Leslie Manville, and not very well liked on any number. They said it wasn't directed well. This is Ben Brantley of the New York Times, which I'm getting 100% of my information from right now.
Well, it's
all he didn't like the direction. He didn't like the direction the overall direction that it took.
Did he like Irons, who I assume is playing the patriarch of
yes,
the
Yes, he plays
clan.
James Tyrone. Yeah. He liked Jeremy Irons. He wasn't crazy about any of the other performers.
People
he
certainly do like Jeremy Irons.
Who doesn't?
He is kind really, of amazing. Really, really yeah.
Who doesn't? And here's a picture of it.
Look at those listeners. Love that photo.
All I can say is this young O'Neill chap is having a great year with
he
Iceman
actually
Cometh
is.
And Spring Awakening and now a poorly reviewed
but, and we think
Long
that
Day's
if he
Journey.
Keeps working at it, he may go somewhere.
He might
get it.
So this particular review had a lot of words in it that I want to go over, or two specifically. So this is where we, you need a thesaurus to figure out what these critics are saying for no good reason. So I'm going to tell you the the word in a sentence, and y'all tell me what it means in context. The enemy in this case are members of the single internecine family, vis-a-vis one another and their own sorry self-defecating skulls.
Spell that, please.
Internecine.
Internecine.
Isn't that like in between different sects of religions?
Well, I could see how it could possibly
between,
go with that.
You know, different levels, different levels of the Catholic Church.
Yeah, it's actually between your nieces.
Between your two nieces.
It's conflict within a group, mutually destructive.
Huh.
And here, this is for
it's
those.
It's us. It is.
Here's another one. This is for those of us who are multilingual. In the play's second half, the Walpurgisnacht of Reckoning up to the first act's Dance of Evasion.
Walpurgisnacht.
Walpurgisnacht. Do you know that word?
Or do you know that person? If you, I did a Stephen Dietz Dracula a while back, and Walpurgisnacht is a kind of a feature of I think Orthodox Christianity, but it's one of those nights where the veil is thin and the spirits are said to walk, and
yes,
all the evil spirits come out.
It's the Feast of the Walpurgisnacht, when the witches congregate.
Yes,
and they the night is specifically the night before.
It's the night that Jonathan Harker goes to Dracula's castle in the literary canon.
There you go. Speaking of that, Young Frankenstein was on TV, and I liked it.
Nice.
He washed my boyfriend.
He washed my boyfriend. All right, Nicole, I'm going to let you talk about this because you sent it to me, and I'm not as so. Bush 41 got a private concert.
He did. So George W. Bush and Barbara Bush had
George H.W. Bush.
Sorry, George H.W. Bush. Sorry, I didn't forget the H. The older Bush. And Barbara Bush had tickets to go see Hamilton. And sadly, Barbara Bush passed away. And then George became very ill and was in the hospital. But he was out and at his office. And the entire cast of Hamilton, currently the tour is in Houston, they went to his office and gave him a private concert. And he looks like a happy man just sitting there with everybody singing. And he had just kind words to say. I thought it was really cool. I was like, oh, wow.
That's wonderful.
Okay, so here's my beef with Hamilton. Can I?
Go for it.
Go for it.
So I just purchased tickets to go see Hamilton in Chicago next month. And I haven't purchased tickets to a Broadway show in a while since probably... Shortly after Hamilton opened, I purchased. But I'd always assumed that the premium tickets were like the center of the orchestra. But no, the premium tickets are the entire orchestra section, with the exception of the limited sight or obstructive views. Mm-hmm. And
what we used to call normal.
Right. So I was able to purchase a ticket at face value, which was much more than a normal face value, so much more than the $175 that you would normally expect to pay for an orchestra seat. But I am like all the way on the orchestra on the right side and seeing, and it just makes me angry that they have single-handedly done this to ticket sales everywhere.
Well, I've been complaining for a while, so I was excited when you joined that. But
I've been with you the whole time.
I wanted to. So after you told me what the premium seating was in Chicago, I checked what the verified straight through what the premium seat is in Houston, and it's more than double what it is in Chicago.
It's $1,000.
It's $1,200 is what they start
for face value seats
through verified Ticketmaster. How they're selling.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yep.
I blame Starbucks because it's that idea that nothing, you can't call anything small or normal anymore. It's authentic, grande.
I am.
The idea that anyone should be paying that many Benjamins for any kind of theater ticket is just beyond the pale.
Well, what upsets me is that Hamilton, and we talked about this yesterday, Nicole, Hamilton single-handedly changed the way Broadway just commercial theater in general prices itself with these premium tickets.
And it's an untenable model.
It's an untenable model. But on one hand, they do that. On the other hand, they do so many wonderful things.
Wonderful things.
Sure. Yep. For kids. And it just so...
The 2 days, there's 2 days today and tomorrow in Houston is all ham EDU programs giving back. So, I mean, it's that double-edged sword.
But for those of us like you and I, we don't get any of that.
Mm-mm.
So, anyway.
Makes you want to go back to school.
Yeah. The last thing we really have time to talk about, because I really want to be able to play that entire interview with
the Harry Connick Jr.,
is I just want to talk about Some Like It Hot, the musical that's coming out.
Yes.
That sounds interesting, but it's not the first Some Like It Hot musical.
No.
As a matter of fact, I got my start in commercial theater on a production of Sugar with Larry Kurt and, what's his name?
Jim Morris.
Bobby Morris.
Bobby Morris.
And Don Ameche.
I love that all you had to do was show
like,
a gap in your tooth.
You're like, tooth.
So, but it was a tremendous flop, Sugar, in 1970-something, and I like it. I just want to say that. You know, they had, and I'm going to play a song right now called, I forgot what it's called, Sun on My Face, and they have lyrics like, I'll sit weeping softly into my iced coffee while drying my tears with the sun on my face. Come on.
Who can't love that?
I know.
Who can't love that? All right.
Who can't?
Let's go listen to that, and we'll come back and talk to City Theater, shall we?
Wonderful.
We shall.
I'm gonna feel some sun on my face.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps, joined by Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
We've been having lovely discussions about theater in general with Bo Paul and Tracy Hurd. And now we're going to switch gears and talk to them about the show that they're doing right next door here to Co-op Studios, which is a show written by a fairly well-known playwright named Arthur Miller called All My Sons. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. First of all,
one of you tell us about this show, All My Sons.
Tracy, I've been...
Wait,
I've
before
been
you do that...
So you go.
Does it? Do you start with ma na na na
ma na na na?
Wrong sons.
That's
okay. I would love to play
a happy version of All My Sons.
I would love to play Uncle Charlie, but
I did love that Uncle Charlie.
So tell us about the show. What is it?
All My Sons. I am playing the role of Kate Keller, the neurotic mom, for lack of a different, better term.
Kind of the matriarch.
Yeah.
Tell us about the show in general.
The show in general. You open with a 1947 family home somewhere in the Midwest, Ohio-ish. Near Columbus. And it's a lovely morning, except that the memorial tree to the not dead but dead son has been snapped in half by a windstorm overnight.
There are two sons. One is MIA. And
except that everyone thinks he is dead, except
missing,
me.
Presumed dead, except by one person.
Yes. Anyway, that has been snapped overnight, and the trauma drama starts there because everyone is convinced that this son is dead, except for my character, and the other son has brought his fiancée to be back to get mom and dad's blessing, but mom won't give a blessing.
And what is your character's relationship to the family? I'm sorry,
I may have said that,
but I wasn't listening.
I am the mother. okay. Bo is the physician who lives next door.
Yes, I'm the next door neighbor.
So you could actually verify whether he's dead or not.
Exactly,
dead.
If we could just find the corpus selecti.
Yes.
But yeah, and I'm... a lot of the some of the play is definitely drawn from a Greek structure, and I'm a little bit of a chorus here, and kind of a cross between a chorus and Jiminy Cricket. I tend to be the guy that comes in and says, "You guys really should not do this thing right before they do the thing."
So you are Jiminy Chorus.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Jiminy Chorus, aww, Lisa.
So now this was Arthur Miller's first hit, if
you
will.
Yeah, this was what it, like, literally before this, you know, went over on Broadway. He said, "If this isn't it, then I'm out." And of his, you know, it's kind of the power troika of Miller is Death of a Salesman, Crucible, and All My Sons. But of the three, this is probably the least produced.
Yep.
Other questions, or do you need more information about the play?
I have loads of questions. I have nothing but questions. First of all, how large is the cast? Who else do we see? What other characters do we see out there?
We have the husband.
Yes, we've got the We've got the so there are three couples. There's the two neighbors on one side, the two neighbors on the other side. Then we have the people in the center who are the central characters,
the Kellers.
The Kellers, who are mother and father. They have one son. He has brought his fiancée, who is also the sweetheart of the son who is missing in action, presumed dead. And then we also have we have the little
the
guy.
Little boy who comes to visit the neighbor. Yeah. Joe Bert.
He's the neighbor boy. He's Bert.
So how do you, I assume then you have a child actor playing this
we
role?
Do.
Yes, we do. And he's a nice kid.
He's not a teenager yet, so he's perfectly pleasant to deal with.
Exactly.
What is his name? Do you know?
His name is Joe. And I can't pronounce his last name.
Wouldn't begin to attempt it.
Colalaho, maybe?
Colioni.
C-O-E-L-A-H something something H-O.
We just call him Joe.
Yes.
Joe. Or actually, we can't call him Joe because the main character's name is Joe. So yes. We call him Joe Bert.
Joe Bert.
Because his name in the play is Bert.
Oh, I see.
But his actual name is Joe, so
it's so confusing.
Well, I did with the same director that we're working with now, Tracy Arnold. Mm-hmm. I was in Bus Stop before this, I believe, like 2 years ago, and the main character of Bus Stop is named Bo, of course. So I had to be called Beaumont, my full name.
So tell me about how was the process of here the. Taking a piece that's been around since the 40s, and specifically, I'm assuming it's still set in the 40s?
Yes.
Yes.
So, which was right after the war. Was there any kind of different approach that this production took?
I don't think per se, because I think a lot of the issues that All My Sons focuses on, especially in regards to, you know, human fallacy and greed in particular, and you know, kind of the way that corporate America works is something that really applies to us, particularly now, but are, you know, certainly universal.
Yeah.
Yeah. They apply. The thing that I will say is Tracy, our director,
uh-huh.
and Courtney, our stage manager, are both, I don't want to say fanatics, but they are very, very strong advocates for sticking precisely to the text. In spite of all of our memory foibles and attempts to adjust things, they want us to stick to the text. I think partly because Tracy writes. She is a playwright.
Yes.
And so both of them are strong advocates for purity of the text.
I was about to say, it is your job and the theater's job to...
It is our job, but it is not always held on to quite as stringently.
And one could argue that it should be in there or not. I mean, there are certain playwrights that get very upset if you... Edward Albee, for one, was very upset.
I was just about to say.
David Mamet is another one. That if you change a "the" in the script, he will get upset.
Mamet will cut you from misplacing an So yes,
but he won't say that at the talkback afterwards.
I think this production, you know, it's we're heavily text based, and with Miller, you kind of have to be. You know, especially this being one of his first works, it's. You know, I certainly won't go so far as to say there's no subtext in the play. Of course there is, but because it is one of his first works, most of the stuff is a lot more upfront.
Yeah.
Although there's certainly a lot happening in what the characters do not say to each other.
Well, and that's that is. It's acting. It's not just acting, it's reacting.
Exactly.
So now you guys opened last week before?
We opened on Friday the 11th, yes.
And how have houses been? How have shows going?
We have people in the audience watching and enjoying. My husband actually said, and he does not give compliments a lot at all, that it was a really exceptional production.
Awesome.
So, and my two boys came and watched, so it is acceptable for junior high and high school kids. They
Excellent.
May groan at you, but it's a good learning experience.
So are we two acts?
A three
acts.
But with one intermission.
Oh, okay.
So we're just splitting it you know, kind of splitting the difference.
Okay. Well, awesome. It sounds great. I, for one, have not have neither seen nor read All My Sons.
I've never seen it. I'm guilty.
It's a surprise. Like I said, of you know, Arthur's three best known works, it's the one that people are like, oh yeah, that one.
Well, it's actually very cathartic. If you want a good cry, come on down.
There you go. And I often do. So you're playing now. When do you close?
We have 11 more performances, so we'll run through this weekend, the next, and the weekend after that.
Okay, however, so you close on June 3rd.
We yes. will not have a Sunday matinee. Yes.
Hence
on...
11 instead of 12.
Exactly. Okay. Our Sunday matinee, unfortunately, we cannot do because my son's character is moving to New York and has to
Boston.
Be
there. You go.
Boston, pardon me.
It's hard East. To do it when you're missing one of the actors.
That main actor.
Where can folks go to get more information?
You can go to City Theater website.
Which is citytheateraustin.org.
Exactly.
Correct. Great. Well, thank you guys so much for coming
you.
On the show.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Thanks, guys.
That was Beau Paul and Tracy Hurd. They are with City Theater's production of All My Sons by Arthur Miller, playing at the City Theater now through June 3rd. For more information, citytheateraustin.org. We'll be right back.
Suns extend a man's vision.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa Sheps, joined by Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
We've been talking to Beau Paul and Tracy Hurd. I'm going to go talk local for just a little bit.
Quickly.
Quickly. And then, we'll do today in theater history.
In what?
Theater history. Well, we'll... the Critics Circle nominations came out.
They
this week.
Did indeed.
And we won't go through them all, but I will say for production, A Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime at Zach Theater, Enron for UT, Henry IV at Eden Room Theater, Pocatello at Street Corner Arts, Ragtime at Texas State, The Repentance of St. Joan at Papers Chairs, and The Wolves at Hyde Park.
Although I really want to make a kicking a soccer ball sound.
Me too. Let's see. I will go for direction. Jason Phelps for The Brother Size. Rudy Ramirez for everything he's ever done. K.T. Shorb for Scheherazade. Dave Stakely for The Curious Incident. Benjamin Summers for Pocatello. Dustin Wills, Catalina de Orozco. And Catalina de Orozco got loads of noms.
Yeah.
And Hannah Wolf for Enron. So that should be a good... And of course, I did not write down when the actual...
It's June 4th at Capital City.
Cap City Comedy Club.
7:30, I believe.
Yeah. So always a fun time. I did notice that I was not nominated for anything.
Well, there is a special award for awesomeness.
there should be one. The other thing I want to talk about. Oh, I went to see Cry It Out.
Oh, it's the last weekend this weekend.
It is the last weekend. So this was the
want to see
Theater Unblocked production with Jenny Lavery and
Lee Eddy
and Kristen. Whatever her last name is, and Ben Wolf.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful performances by all four, I should say. And it's at the Wizenhut Theater, which is my favorite theater in the Zac.
They have a great model, that company, too, right? The pay what you can sort of. I'm interested in learning more about that theater company.
Well, it's not a pay what you can. Ground Floor Theaters pay what you can. They have a, like most theaters, they do a sliding
industry
scale.
Sliding.
They do a sliding scale. Most theaters do that. But they do, so the more you contribute, the better seats you are liable to get. Finally, Zilker Theater announced some cast for All Shook Up, their summer musical. Andrew
like
Panada.
Say it like Elvis.
No.
Don't be cruel.
Don't be cruel. You know what you are.
I had to do an Elvis impression in my second to last performance and wear the full fig.
There you go. Okay. Today in theater history. Today in theater history. In 1946. It says the headline is, "No, you can't get a man with a gun," says Donald Trump. and he gets your gun open, 1946. Hey. And I think All My Sons was 1947. Okay, well, that would be the next line.
Close enough.
1952, New Faces of 1952. was staged, and a couple of the actors that were in it was somebody named Eartha Kitt, Carol Lawrence.
Cut 79 lives.
It was the opening tonight of Can Can in 1962.
You Can.
Oh, I love that Cole Porter show, man.
I meant to say that's a revival, and it was the first night of a series of revivals done at City Center, started by Gene Dalrymple.
I love the Can Can.
1965, Roar the Crease Paint. Smell O' the Crowd.
Smell O' the Crowd.
Let's see. 2001, Skipping All the Way. This is an interesting one. Do you remember Jane Eyre, the musical?
Yes.
Did not do very well.
Yes.
And do you remember they didn't have enough money to run through Tony's. Somebody stepped up to give them money to run through Tony's. Do y'all remember who that was?
I don't. And I don't remember the cast, and it was good people in the cast.
Well, before she decided to do it, she took a Jagged Little Pill.
Alanis Morissette.
It was Alanis Morissette.
That's what it was.
Didn't do any good. They still closed. Mm-mm. They got nominated for several things, but didn't win. It starred Marla Shaffel.
They got further than Rebecca did.
They did. birthdays.
Bon anniversaire.
Henry Fonda.
Balloons.
Margaret Sullivan. Studs Terkel. Bruce Norris. Brian F. O'Byrne, who I don't know who that is, and Andrew Keenan Bulger, born in 1985. Him and
really?
Laura Benanti.
85.
It is also the birthday of local lighting designer who was nominated for a Critics Circle Award, Natalie George.
Miss Natalie George.
Tomorrow, Lisa B. Thompson, playwright.
I love Lisa B. Thompson.
And on Friday, the creative director, artistic director of Trinity Street Players, Anne Pittman Zarate.
Oh. Some good birthdays right
la,
now.
La, 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 la.
Hey, I'm Harry Connick Jr. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. And I'm telling you what, I never had more fun in my life. I'll hang out with these beautiful women anytime.
We are beautiful, aren't we?
You're right.
So that's a little tease for our interview with Harry Connick Jr., who nobody knows this, but he goes by Henry. So let's take a little break and we'll come back. And this is from that auspicious show, Jane Eyre, the musical.
It'll be perfectly nice having somebody with whom to converse.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
We've been having lovely conversations with Bhopal and Tracy Hurd. And yesterday, what did we do yesterday, Nicole?
Had a spot of tea and talked about culture and literature and art.
We did have a spot of tea. We were really, really lucky. We were able to have an interview with Harry Connick Jr., who is certainly a Renaissance man. There's nothing that man hasn't done.
No. We didn't even talk about talk shows. I mean, he's everything.
We didn't
everything.
Talk about a lot of things. He does a lot of things. He's a humanitarian as well, which is why he's here. He's here talking about colon cancer. Or he was here. He was here last night speaking at the Ransom Center. He's gone now.
Correct.
He's gone.
He's waiting at your house for you.
He is. Well, let's listen to this interview. We talked to him for about 20 minutes, so sit back, relax, and enjoy our interview with Harry Connick Jr. Hey, everybody. Nicole and I are here. We're just lounging at the Four Seasons Hotel, having a little high tea, some finger sandwiches without crust. And look who stopped by. Harry Connick Jr. begged to come sit with us. Harry Connick Jr., welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Thanks for saving me the crust.
Well, we did have it. It's in that little plate right next to you. Feel free to have as much as you want.
I plan on it.
We're looking at everything you do, have done. And my question is, what haven't you done? You are amazing.
Oh, that's very kind. You know, I've done a lot of things. I think I've done just about everything there is to do in show business, you know, Broadway and television and touring and recording and all of that stuff. And I love all of it in different ways. But I guess there's a lot of things within those categories that I still have yet to do that maybe one day I'll get around to doing.
You have something specific on your bucket list you'd like to share with us?
Not really. If it gets to the point where I think of something really specifically, then I'll probably be working on it. But there's, like, I would love to direct something on Broadway. That's an example, or a film, because I've done plenty of each, and I love that format so much. I love the family that's created for these different kind of environments, whether it's 3 months or a year. I love the feeling of that. So that's an example of something that I'd like to do. That there's nothing specific in my mind right now, but maybe one day I'll get a chance to do it.
You'll give us a call or a text when you figure that out, right?
Absolutely. You'll be the first to know.
Excellent. Well, I want to talk about what you're doing here in Austin, but just before I do that, we have to hit the theater stuff.
Sure.
Because I find it amazing. So I was talking to someone just a little while ago talking about this interview, and they said, when is he going to write a musical? And I go, well, he already did.
Right. I did back in 2000. And... you know, musicals are a very certain and special type of beast. You know, it's like the fact that a musical even gets made is kind of a miracle. There's so many things that go into it, from the inception, the germ of the idea, all the way through the development. You know, for it to actually get to a point where people can see it, you know, let alone Broadway, is really kind of a miraculous process. There's always something to love about, even if it's a musical that, you know, maybe doesn't get good reviews or whatever. There's just the fact that it made it there, I think deserves credit. And at some point I'd like to write another one. I have a few things that I'm kind of working on that hopefully one day will see the light of day, but nothing really nailed down.
My life story is open for option, if you want.
I love it.
So yeah, you did Thou Shalt Not with Susan Stroman.
That's right.
Who I had the honor of working with. So I used to do industrial shows. Okay. Do you know what those are?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so I used to do those, and Susan and I did a couple of them together. And there's a current documentary now called Bathtubs Over Broadway. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's just amazing. It just talks about the business.
That's cool.
Yeah. So you wrote the music and lyrics for Thou Shalt Not.
That's right.
Just pretty amazing. And thank then. And just a few years later, you were at South Pacific for
That's
television.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That never made it to stage with you in it, correct?
No, I never did it on stage.
Okay. Well, our lovely co-host, who's not with us, Nick Mayo, was in it
in
New York.
Production.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pajama Game. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
I still reference that version of Pajama Game all these years later as one of the best musicals.
Oh,
people
so
are like,
nice.
Dated musicals don't work. And I'm like, people, I wanted them to have that 7.5 cent raise. Like, you have no idea.
That's
it
nice.
Worked.
That's really great. I think that's a testament to a philosophy of how to perform musicals like that. I mean, if you have something that's as structurally sound as The Pajama Game, and a great director like Kathleen Marshall, and in my case, a co-star like Kelly O'Hara, who shared the same belief in terms of how real these people are. Like, we didn't look at that as a musical. We looked at it as these are real people at a particular time in our country's history that we're dealing with, you know, various issues, serious issues that a lot of people deal with now. And if you come from that place as opposed to some kind of caricature or what you think a musical character should be, I think it has a big impact on the way people perceive it. Because I think people thought that these characters really had a connection. And that doesn't work unless everybody's on board with that, you know? But I appreciate that. And I was fortunate to be around some really talented people.
Well, and then and Pajama Game continues to have relevance in terms of its subject matter, even today,
sure,
probably
yeah.
even more so.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that goes back to what you were talking about before, and the cool thing about theater, you walk into these shows and you're away for a couple months, a few years, and you come back together and the family just builds itself again.
Yeah, it's
and
amazing.
Yeah, that's one of the wonderful things about this art form is
it's
the
incredible.
Family that you create.
Yeah, it's really true. In fact, when I was doing Thou Shalt Not, I wasn't in the show, but I was around the show intimately for months and months. And it's an incredible sensation, especially when you consider that everyone involved is enormously talented in one way or another. It's not like, you know, in the same field. You know, it's not like walking down the street and there's people who are good at law and medicine. Everybody there lives and breathes singing and dancing and acting, and it's just the most magical place to be.
Awesome. I have two more theatrical things to talk about, and then we're going to go into other subjects. But one of the things that just struck me is you've seen incredible success in the theatrical things that you've done. And then, of course, there was On a Clear Day, which didn't run so long.
Right.
And I have one Broadway experience, and we actually closed after three performances. Mm-hmm. And there was this incredible high. An amazing thing is you put the show together, you did the previews, you did our out-of-town tryouts, and then that crashing down when things didn't go so well. Mm-hmm. How do you feel having gone through Thou Shalt Not, which was a new show that has everything that that it comes to, and then you get things like
Pajama Game and then
Clear Day, On a Clear Day, which didn't do so well. Can you talk about the highs and lows and as you deal with them?
Sure. I you know, the older I get, and I'm not trying to be facetious when I say this, the older I get, the more I wonder how different my views about entertainment are compared to other people. I don't have the same highs and lows that most people talk about. On a Clear Day was an incredible experience for me. I love the role. I love the cast, and there were so many things to love about it. And as the crowds got smaller and smaller, it doesn't affect me in any way. And I remember seeing people backstage saying things like, there's one particular example when I was on stage and I could see one of the other actors about to come on, and she was mouthing the words, "I'm so tired." And I thought to myself, well, go home, because there's a long line of people that would love this. Yeah. And so every time I walk on stage, I'm not the guy who says, oh man, Sunday night, you know, we get a day off tomorrow. It just doesn't enter my mind. Not that I don't get tired, and I mean, I'm human and I have ups and downs, I guess, but I was 100% for every single show I've ever done in my life for anything. Yeah. And I don't care but that, you don't meet a lot of people who say that. That doesn't make, I'm not saying I'm better or worse, but they'll refer to Broadway as a grind or something like that. I bleed this stuff. Like, you have to really bleed this to have the significance that it has in my life. So it didn't, did I wish it would have gone on? Of course I do. But it didn't affect the performances at all. It really, it's like I'm able to turn that vulnerability off or something, I guess.
Sure. And the final piece of theater thing is you just closed a show that you starred in and you have writing credit on, and we think there's going to be future plans about it, and that's something I'm actually really excited to see, and that's The Sting, the musical. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. I was asked to participate in it, and I was thrilled about that because I love the movie, and I was asked to play Paul Newman's part, and I thought that the writers and the creative team did some really impressive things. And so we did a month at the Paper Mill in a workshop, which is the chance to, as you know, find out things that work, find out things that don't work. And I think the ultimate goal of any show that goes out of town is to make it to Broadway, and I'm sure that, you know, that there's no difference here. So it's a really talented group, and we had there's a fella named Jay Harrison G, who's just a force. He's really a force, and he was playing Robert Redford's part. And for me to go out on stage with him every night was, I told him backstage one night, I said, going out on stage with you every night, Jay, is like going out on the court with LeBron James. I said, but of course I'm LeBron. He laughed, you know, but he's an immense talent, and everybody involved was just incredible.
Yeah, Jay Harrison was on our show.
Let me try on Lola's kinky boots.
Yeah. So you're right. He's got an incredible energy. And the cool thing about this version of The Sting is he is playing the Robert Redford role,
right.
And as it was originally written for an African-American player.
I actually asked the screenplay writer about that, and he said that's not true. So I thought it was too, not to correct you on the air,
but I
found that out recently too. I said, was this written for an African-American? He said it wasn't. Oh. So it was, from what I understand, it was the people that were reimagining this thing as a musical to have the role of Johnny Hooker be played by an African-American, which actually makes a lot of sense, and it gives the show a lot more gravitas in a lot of ways. So I think it was a really good idea.
Awesome. Well, we are so looking forward to that doing whatever it's going to do.
Luke Hawkins just recently did a show here in Austin, who's also in the cast.
That
he's
guy,
so excited to be in it, too.
Yeah, he's incredible. I played with a lot of tap dancers. Like, I used to be Maurice Hines' rehearsal piano player. And Luke's one of the greatest tap dancers I've ever seen.
He
world class.
Blows my mind.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So
you know what? I'll tell you a little interesting tidbit is that in the Sting, the opening number of the second act was a big tap thing that I and the rest of the cast did. And I hadn't moved in the first act that much, so I needed to make sure, you know, you don't want to pull a muscle, so I'd have to warm up. So every intermission without fail, we would tap dance through the whole thing. Just the two of us backstage, and it was so fun because he's got an amazing musical mind, and it was fun to kind of play ping pong with him with musical ideas, but with our feet. He's sweetheart, amazing talent.
Yeah, when I saw that you were doing the show, and I was like, oh, that's so great. That made me happy.
Oh, that's
too,
good. So, yeah, for sure.
Okay, so I also need to tell you that I'm probably responsible for at least about 25 to 50 cents of your income. So you're welcome. You have a zillion albums and they're all platinum and all sorts of other medals. But I just love songs I heard.
Oh, thanks.
Specifically, and today if I play it, I just rock out on it, is your version of Do Re Mi, which I think just is so awesome.
That was so fun. My mother had this thing where when she spoke to us as children or any children, she would never speak to them in sort of childish speak. She would always speak to them as if she was speaking to adults, which is actually kind of rare, I think. And we always assumed that we were as smart as she was, even though I don't think my sister probably is, but I don't think I was. But she was always very empowering to us. And somehow in music, a lot of times when something's associated with children, except if you're talking about Peter and the Wolf, maybe, and I'm sure there's some other projects, a lot of times things are sort of watered down or made more accessible or whatever that means. And I just didn't think I wanted to do that. You know, the jazz music and big band music and all music that I heard as a kid was wonderful and simple and complex and complicated all at the same time. So I wanted to do that with that record. And it was a bit of a risk because sometimes it's hard to tap your toes to it, but I thought, let's put it out there and see what happens.
Well, you have a convert in me. And so so you're here in town, and you're doing something rather special now that you're 40 years old, right?
Thank you
for that. you and your wife are here talking about getting screenings for colon cancer. Is that correct?
That's right. My wife, Jill, was diagnosed with breast cancer 5 years ago, and you know, she was adamant about early screening. It was really, really important to her, almost to the point where I was pretty blown away by that. Like, it seemed like every other week she was saying, I got to go get a mammogram or a sonogram. And it was once a year, but I said, man, she's so responsible with that, and kind of got that into my head. And when I turned 50 last year, the conversations about colonoscopy started coming up, and I'm thinking, man, I just don't want to do it for lots of reasons. Same reasons that your listeners are probably thinking about now. And
our listeners don't think.
That's great. I should come on the show more often. I can say anything.
You could, actually.
We're going around trying to get people to get screened. This is the second leading cause of cancer deaths among men and women in the United States.
That mind boggles me.
It's
and
incredible.
Texas and the screening is...
Texas is number 41. You know, whenever you talk about colon cancer, I mean, a lot of people, let's just get totally real, they don't even like to say colorectal cancer because it's just uncomfortable to talk about. And the whole Screen With Me challenge, the hashtag Screen With Me challenge, is about demystifying all of this. 50's a lot different now than it used to be. Yeah. And I just think it's really, listen, all the stuff we talked about with theater, none of that would happen if I was laying in the hospital because I didn't get screened. This is, it all boils down to your health. And this is something that really is very manageable. 90% of these cancers are treatable if they're detected early. Like, there's no reason why people shouldn't do it. So we want everybody to go get screened. We think it's very important.
Is there a website that our listeners could go to?
Yeah, sure. They can go. Well, the hashtag is Screen With Me. And there's the new 50, new50.com. It's N-E-W and then the number 50. It's a very informative website, and people can learn a lot.
Or people can have a chat with me. I'm, you know, I'm a doctor.
She's a doctor on the side.
Oh, on the side. Yeah.
So just a couple more things. As I just, and we could talk to you all day, and if you're up for it, we're good for that. Not? You and I sort of have a little parallel in that your mother, if I'm right, so correct me if I'm wrong, her parents come from Eastern Europe.
That's right.
Around the turn of the century.
That's right.
Mine as well.
Oh, very nice.
And
I noticed your beautiful star on your necklace.
Yes, so this actually belonged to my sister, and mean a lot, who died of kidney cancer. Mm. So cancer strikes. I don't think there's a family that cancer doesn't affect. I'm just going to keep making connections to me. your first acting role was Memphis Belle, wasn't
it? That's right.
In B-17. My father flew B-24.
No way.
Yeah, no way. I wouldn't kid you.
Wow, that's
so
very
I just
cool.
think it's cool.
We were
so
meant
we
to
should
be
probably
together.
Hang out more often.
Yeah, I love it.
But you, when I look at everything you've done, you've got, you know, of course you've got all the artistic pursuits. You clearly have a deep and full, rich heart. You're doing this work on cancer. You've done so much work in New Orleans, your hometown, around relief from Katrina. Where did you get that sense of social justice? Well, and the zing. But where did that sense just, not everybody has that feels like they got to help their other fellow person.
Well, it's from my parents. You know, my parents were both public servants. My mother was the type of person who, she'd be bringing me to school, and when she was running for judge, there would be a poster of her on a telephone pole, and she would stop the car and make me go out and take it down because it was illegal to,
oh my God,
you know, that kind of stuff. Or you know, we'd be at the grocery store, my dad would stop, you know, make me get out and go help that guy or that lady with their bags, you know, if they were elderly. And you pound that into somebody's head over and over, you start to realize, well, maybe this is the right thing to do. My dad tells a story. In the 1940s, he was living in Georgia, and they were on some rural road outside of Atlanta, and it was freezing outside. And he was in the car with a couple of his buddies, and there was an African-American man that was literally stuck in molasses in the road. He had a molasses truck, which had toppled over, and this man in the cold weather was couldn't move. And my dad says, stop the car, and these fellas said, I'm assuming they were all white guys, said, what do you want to stop for? My dad says, well, we got to help that guy. And I don't want to speak for my dad, but I think it was met with some surprise. And he went out there and got into molasses with him and helped him out. And that's what I want to be. I want to be the person who, when you see something that doesn't look right, most of us have compassion, but few people take action and do something about it. I'm not saying I'm that person, but my father's that person, and my mother's that person, and my sister is that person. So that's what drives me, is to do, I'm Catholic, and that's what we study. That's what we try to do. In terms of the zing, I think people are born with that. Oh, you know Mark Shaman, right, the composer? Mm-hmm. We were talking the other day, and he goes, the winner and still champion show business. And I thought that was so great. I mean, you get punched in the face enough in this business, and you keep coming back. Mm-hmm. And why do we keep coming back? You come back because there's something that happens to me and to you when you stand on a stage, and there's some fleeting, indescribable moment that this connection that you have with an audience, with a bunch of strangers, and it's like you can't get enough. And I think it's a thing in your brain that drives you to want that, you know. And so you got to be nuts to do that. But I love doing it.
Well, we're glad you have that zing. And I will tell you, I don't know if are your parents still living?
My mother died when I was 13, ovarian cancer. Mm-hmm. My dad's 92 and doing really well.
Well, I'm sure if you asked him, he would say that you are that guy. Oh, we're glad that you are.
Thank you so much.
Well, Harry Connick Jr., thank you so much for joining us on Offstage and on the Air. We are thrilled to have been able to talk to you.
Great to talk to y'all. Thanks for having me. Do a deer, a female deer, ray a drop of golden sun, yeah.
Oh my God, what a wonderful interview that was. That
it
was fun.
Was.
I just loved his story about the molasses.
I did, the molasses. It's so funny, I was thinking about that later on.
Just the idea of somebody
stuck in molasses, and I giggled, and I'm like,
which,
it's not funny.
Which, by the way,
was
my sorority name in college.
Yeah.
Well, we did it. So yeah, Harry Connick Jr., what a wonderful man.
And
he
easy
was
on the eyes.
Very easy on the eyes.
Yeah,
he's a handsome man.
He had a wonderful entourage as well. We felt quite important. Everybody, we walked into the room in the Four Seasons. We were not indeed having brunch.
you let the cat out of the bag.
And
Lisa,
he had an entourage people of about 6 or 7 people there, and they were all chit-chatting. As soon as the recorder went on, it was like a conductor went, and everybody was
well practiced.
Really great. Wonderful. Thank you guys for another wonderful week.
It was a lovely week.
Bo and Tracy, thank you guys for joining us here.
Absolutely.
Thank you. It was fun.
And I think you guys are going to stick around. We'll like trudge backstage right after this and talk there.
Sure.
The dumpsters are ripe. They have not been changed in quite a while. you can get our podcast. How do you get that podcast?
Oh, well, you go to offstageonair.com. And just enter your name in the little box to the right.
And then it goes into your inbox.
It does.
We arrived.
Just like, how was that again? Right. Which, interestingly enough, is a sound effect from the glass meningery.
It's when Dewey Laura Christelle breaks the glass, you hear.
It is indeed.
Blow out your glass.
You can also get us on iTunes and anywhere else that you get podcast. Austin, if you're listening on the terrestrial radio and doing terrestrial things, Austin Monitor News is next. If you are listening on the podcast, stick around. We're going to go backstage. Nick and Nicole and I will be back next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. And going out, we're going to play a little song about show tunes from Jerry's Girls.
Show tunes!
Love them!
There's just no tune as exciting.
The curtain has just come down on It's Hot, the straight play. The story of a hot place with hot people and no air conditioning.
It's a lot of sound effects.
Which is a story of my life. It is. There's a lot of that.
Sizzle.
I want
steam heat.
Well, we are. We have left the backstage of the theater, and we are standing here next to the dumpsters. We are not standing in puddles of unknown liquid because it's too damn hot for liquid
They're
to stay
all
on the
dried
ground.
Up.
There are some fried eggs here on the ground, and we have joining us Tracy Hurd. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. How are you?
And Beau Paul.
Hello.
Have either of you been backstage with us before?
I have not.
Yeah.
Once, many, many years.
Yes.
Ago.
Well, it couldn't be too many. We've only been doing this for what? A couple of years.
No, we've
three
actually
years
been
ago,
doing
three
this.
Years?
We've been doing the backstage part probably 3 or 4
okay,
years now.
3 or 4 years. So who knows? Time flies.
Yeah, show we've number been 468 in there.
Doing well, we've been doing the show for over 10 years.
We are not over 10 years. We are. We will be 10. We'll be. We are in our 9th year.
So when is your anniversary?
Your 10th soon.
Well, we are about to start our 10th season.
Oh,
in 2 weeks.
Okay. It was coming up.
And so we have a year and a couple of weeks before our 10-year anniversary. And so that's sort of cool.
Cool. That's coming up, man. That's
so,
crazy.
Bo, we were talking before. You know, we were giving the spiel on how to deal with the microphones. Uh-huh. And you said, oh, I've been podcasting for 10 years, which,
yes.
By the way, I have also been podcasting for 10 years, which is podcasts weren't very popular 10 years ago, not like they are now.
Yeah, they had kind of... You know, around 2006, 2007, mm-hmm. the people were first figuring out, you know, and it really coincided with the advent of everybody carrying the smartphone around in their pockets, because before then, I think a lot of people were like, well, how do you listen to this and blah, 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 blah. And then they were like, here's an app, and now you can listen to all the podcasts that you
so make. What is your podcast? What is the subject matter of your podcast?
So I have done two. I've done on the late lamented spill.com webcast, I did a podcast called the League of Extremely Ordinary Gentlemen.
Of which you are not one of.
That we and it was a kind of a broad look at geek culture. You know, definitely talking about movies. We started the podcast right about the time that the Marvel Cinematic Universe came about, so mm-hmm. Iron Man and all that sort of thing. And we kind of followed them right along. And also talking about TV, comic books, you know, the occasional dab of theater. And we had a couple of different podcasts kind of come out of that. Dr. Nerd Love, who's a local advice columnist mm-hmm. for The Geeky Lovelorn, Double Toasted, which just hit 100,000 podcast followers.
Wow. Congratulations.
And then, the other sect that kind of split off from Spill.com was OneOfUs.net, and that's who I currently record for. We do The Original Gentleman, which is three persons of any given makeup of the people that do stuff for the site. And once again, we kind of do the broad look at geek culture and what we're listening to, watching, and reading.
Awesome. What is there a website folks can go to?
Yes.
To find you?
OneOfUs.net.
OneOfUs.net. Awesome. And so where did you grow up? Where do you hail
from?
I'm
a native Austinite.
Are you? What high school did you go to?
Did you not see my unicorn horn?
Yeah. You know what, though? I was talking to a native Austinite this week. We decided you are no longer unicorns.
Yes, you are not.
You are endangered species.
Yeah.
There's a lot of you. It's not. Not a unicorn anymore. Yeah. It's an endangered species.
But I did go to answer the question, Westlake High.
Oh, okay. Oh, I think I knew that. Mm-hmm. I knew that. I saw that somewhere. And were you part of the theater department at Westlake High?
Very much so.
Okay. Did you do musicals as well, or were you just...
So when I first started freshman year, I was more of a choir kid, and I kind of fell out with that. I did. I was part of the chorus for Bye Bye Birdie, and I think that's the last musical I ever did. Although that's how I got into theater by, in elementary school, getting into a production of Oliver.
Of course.
I love musical theater, and I have a pretty good voice, but it's not highly trained, so I don't...
Not too
I
late.
Don't really,
You're still a young man.
I'm actually given thought to working on that a bit.
I think it's...
Bye Birdie. That show's come up three or four times.
Well,
in the last
actually,
week.
I wanted to take a little
tangent
is the word I was trying to come up with. Did they not cancel Fox's
They just
Bye
never
Bye
discussed
Live?
It again. It was supposed to be with J-Lo, and then like nothing ever
did
happened.
Did it get canceled?
No.
It's still happening?
No, nobody said anything.
Oh,
I don't know.
It's not happening.
We don't know.
It's in limbo.
It's yes.
We don't know.
Okay, I thought there was a word one way or the other just recently.
I don't believe so, but I will
you check
news.
Because
I'll
think
check it right
I think it's
now.
Really,
who
really
was,
important.
Who was playing the Paul Lind role?
They hadn't cast it? Anything, but J-Lo will be doing Bye Bye Birdie, and that was it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you did Oliver in elementary school.
Oh, yeah, as a very young tot, I was an orphan in Oliver, and that kind of led to, I got more into the choral side of things, but when I hit freshman year, I decided I liked acting more.
Cool.
And my first role was a non-speaking part in The Trojan Women.
Okay, it's still happening.
Okay,
it's
still
so
happening.
So it's been pushed twice. It was supposed to air December 2017. Her busy schedule pushed it to December 18th. That's no longer the case. Her scheduling was still going.
Okay.
It's moving and officially happening
we
in
got
2019.
It. Awesome. Well, yeah. So if you didn't know, that wasn't about Oliver. That was about Bye Bye Birdie. I know. So when you graduated Westlake, did you go to college?
I did in various places.
Uh-huh. Name two of them.
Yes. Well, really, when it comes to theater, the only thing worth mentioning is Southwest Texas, which is now Texas State University, of course. And I left there the year before.
Before Caitlin got
there. They changed the name.
Oh.
But I quite like the department, and to this day, it still has a fine department. Many of our...
Well, it's
like
an award.
The top leading
it's,
now.
Yes. Yeah, one of the top 10 musical theater schools in the country.
Yes, and of course, we have a lot of, you know, I went to school with Scott Shipman, among other things, among other people, who's still a friend of mine. I graduated. I did some local theater in Austin. Took a hiatus to be a bartender, and then went back to school. And so, hence the time frame.
Okay,
for me.
For extra credit, can you tell me how to make a Harvey Wallbanger?
I cannot.
Okay, good. Yeah. I discovered that.
You know
that,
what? I like that he was honest and like, no, it's not happening, Lisa.
It's, well, it turns out it's generational.
Yeah.
Harvey Wallbanger was very big in the late 70s and early 80s.
It's the Long Island iced tea of my parents'
Yeah,
generation.
It's not very well known anymore, which I did not know.
Oh, no.
I have a story about Harvey Wallbanger.
My cousin likes making him as a bartender.
Okay.
It's more of a punchline than a drink at this point, because it's a funny drink to order.
It is. Tracy, so tell me about you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Emporia, Kansas, actually.
Emporia in the realm of
Kansas? If you
go
straight north on 35 past Wichita and stop before you get to Kansas City, you will run into Emporia.
So I'm guessing it's a small
Emporia
little town.
Emporia is a great name.
It is. It has a university. It was a teacher's college. And it has about 30,000 people in it. So not a large town. I grew up there. I did actually play the part of Dorothy when I was a senior in high school.
Oh my gosh, in Kansas.
I have the red shoes, the pinafore, the whole shebang. Although the first musical I ever did, I played the deaf mute in...
Fantastics.
No, the dancing one, Silent Susan. Nobody can do it anymore because...
Silent Susan, never heard of it.
That was my character. Yeah. No, that's not the name of the musical.
Oh, I was about to say, I haven't heard of Silent Susan, the musical.
Oh, Finian's Rainbow.
Oh, Finian's
Rainbow.
Yeah,
they just recently did a revival,
I think they did.
A concert version of it in New York.
Yeah, no, it's got some great music. Old Devil Moon is one of my favorite songs. But then I ended up getting a scholarship and went to Southern Methodist University in
SMU in Dallas.
Yes. Not because I'm a Methodist. I'm a good pagan.
No, did you eat the good Bubba's fried chicken across the street?
Oh, God, yes. God.
Isn't that stuff?
They're
just like
pancakes and biscuits.
The biscuits,
forget the chicken,
right?
The biscuits.
I haven't talked about Bubba's in a while, but she said SMU, it's the greatest thing in Dallas, is Bubba's fried chicken at Jack's Seasoning Salt for their burgers and fries right next door. Oh,
I used to work at Steve's Ice Cream, too, if you ever meandered over there.
Yeah.
I even made the homemade ice cream. The cinnamon was my favorite flavor.
Bo, have you been to this chicken store that we're talking about?
I am not a regular habitué of Dallas.
Habitué?
Yes.
Habitué.
Okay. I've been, other than the occasional trip to Deep Ellum in my youth, I really haven't spent a lot of time in Dallas.
So you went to SMU for theater?
Yes, I was there when... Yeah, no, I went there for the chicken and biscuits.
I had a
double major with a minor in history. So music, theater, and history. And then my senior year, I went to London and fluffed my way through history to finish off that second major.
So you went to London to study history... Not
all
theater.
I did was spend every dime I had to go and see shows in the West End.
Do you remember what the highlight of your West End experience was?
Brilliant Romeo and Juliet by the RSC, a god-awful King Lear by the National, where everybody looked like they were in Star Trek costumes.
Okay, this is some strange new word, use of the word god-awful that I don't understand, because that sounds awesome.
No, it was a bad production in Star Wars-looking costumes.
Oh, damn.
Not Star Wars, Star Trek.
Yes.
And yeah, it was not good. Winter's Tale by the RSC was brilliant. Saw Jeremy Irons, who we were talking about earlier, in The Rover at the Mermaid, which was really cool. So, in terms of names, Gielgud did a show. I got to see Maggie Smith and Lettuce and Lovage.
Maggie.
What's her name from Chicago?
Bibi Newworth?
No, the one, the Welsh bit.
Oh, yes.
Catherine
Zeta-Jones.
Gwen Verdi and Anne Rankin, went to
they're at the movie.
You're at the movie. I'm like,
I know, but I got to see Zeta Jones when she was still just starting out in maybe Cat on a Hot Tin.
So it sounds like that you have an affinity for the Bard's work.
I do. I do very much.
Do you also perform in Shakespeare?
Yes. Did Titania when I was living in Brussels.
Midsummer Night's Dream.
Midsummer Night's Dream, yes. I got to slither around in a bodysuit and a scarf and drool all over.
See, I do that at home.
don't we all?
I was like, Lisa, you're doing it right now. Stop.
I also got to do, can I say the M play since we're not technically...
Yeah, you can say anything you want.
So I got
to
play
one
of the witches in Macbeth. And it was
you
the
can
movie.
Also
I didn't
say it because
that either.
We're not crazy people.
I got shooed out of a theater and told to run around, hop around on it, run around three times and say something backwards and hop on one foot. So.
TDF does these little videos about theater lingo. No, lingo.
Oh.
And one of them was titled The Danish Play.
No,
not
the
Danish
Scottish
play, the Scottish play. Scottish. Danish play is Hamlet.
You all get that.
I'm going to start calling it the Danish play from now on.
The Scottish play. And they went through the different incarnations
some are spits, some
turning,
the spin,
spitting, and it's always different.
Yeah, they had me do like the trifecta. I had to run around.
I've told
the theater
people
three
not
times.
Doing it. It's your superstition.
Fell through the stage up to my knee in the production. So I'm like, all right, I'll run around and spit.
Go to YouTube and Google Blackadder Macbeth and just watch that.
I'll watch Blackadder any day, anytime.
What is Blackadder?
Blackadder is Rowan Atkinson.
It's Rowan Atkinson.
Oh, it's Rowan Atkinson.
Mr. Bean. A little there. But there's one. There's several series of it, but
the Elizabethan is the best.
Yes. Then the one after that, which takes place at the Regency, there's a very funny incident with the superstition surrounding Macbeth.
Yes.
Well, we're just about out of time for both of you. So I'm curious, Bo, you have been in Austin for the majority of your life. Do you have plans to stay here or do you want to venture away?
Venturing away, I'm actually kind of making an effort to get representation right now and do more film work, which is a good way of, and also I'm a freelance writer, and my current contract gig is about to come to a close, so I'm kind of happy-go-lucky right now.
Do you have a personal website you'd like to spout off right now? We don't have the same rules.
I do not, but you can you can find me through oneofus.net.
Okay.
You can also, on Twitter, I am a Gentleman Bo. One word.
Oh, that's a good handle. You're lucky.
And Tracy, what about you? Do you have a web presence?
I am... no.
no.
I don't do well with technical things.
Cool.
I just hand it over to my husband and my kids.
You're high tide. How many kids do you have?
Two boys.
And do they like to perform?
Connor is doing a classical guitar concert with his group at Bowie this evening.
Cool.
And Palmer plays the clarinet.
Excellent.
Oh, that's awesome. High.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us backstage.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Fun. So we'll see you next time.
Yes.
Cool.
Excellent. Adios.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. He tucks it right under his chin, and he bows, oh he bows, for he knows, yes he knows.